Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. Showtime's Friday night space for unscripted programming expanded last week with true crime miniseries Murder in the Bayou. Director Matthew Gulkin and writer Ethan Brown join me next. Fox introduces Bless the Heart to its superb Sunday animation domination lineup later this month. This South Shall Rise Again tune has risen and has people like Kristen Wiig and Maya Rudolph in its voice posse. And we will connect with creator executive producer Emily Spivey, that's anywhere, Emily Spivey, next hour. Also ahead, a last-minute Dancing with the Stars switcheroo, Game of Thrones off to the Emmy Award races, our classic trivia question, and another film creation is our show to know. Consider it undone. Hey everyone, I'm Simon Applebaum, simulcasting live from New York on Blog Talk Radio and Spreaker, and presented on the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. This just in, tomorrow will be televised. Brought to you by Audible.com, the leading provider of spoken audio entertainment information that will transform the way you hear the world. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Get a trio of great audiobooks when you sign up for a 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/televised. More details later in the program. A wonderful Monday afternoon to you and all, wherever you are, and welcome to the program All About Television. 75 degrees at the top of the hour here in New York. We have some wonderful guests coming your way over the next 90 minutes, plus some interesting features as well, and we invite you, as always, to be involved in the program. Get interactive with us. It's so simple. Pick up the phone, dial in, and use this number, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The number's good anyway. You're catching us across the country, all around the world, here on Blog Talk Radio and Speaker. And if you don't like the phone, that's okay with us, because we got a chat room that's ready to hear from you. All you have to do is go to blogtalkradio.com/televised, look for the chat room, nicknamed SimonApple04, and put your thoughts in the room, and we will get to them. And while the program is on the air, you can connect others by using Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon on your Blog Talk or Speaker screen. Follow the instructions of other people to be live with you. Matthew Gulkin and Ethan Brown from Murder in the Bayou on Showtime will join us live here on the Big Apple after these news notes. You won't see Christie Brinkley on tonight's season opener of Dancing with the Stars on ABC. Brinkley injured her wrist and arm during a preseason premiere rehearsal, requiring surgery, according to an ABC spokesperson. In her absence, daughter and Sports Illustrated model Sailor Brinkley Cook will compete. Wendy Williams kicked off her second decade in daytime syndication this morning, and thanks to a new contract, Williams will continue to host and executive produce the program through 2022. Debmar Mercury, Lionsgate subsidiary, remains the syndicator. Showtime has dropped plans to make King Killer Chronicles, the genre with music saga involving Hamilton creator Lin-Manuel Miranda. The decision comes less than a year after Showtime agreed to make the series with Lionsgate as co-partner. Lionsgate intends to find a new home for King Killer, with Apple TV Plus among the possibilities. And very interesting is that they dropped this series. However, Showtime is going forward with two very interesting sagas, Halo, based on the famous video game, and Gormenghast, which they are doing with Fremantle, based on the famous book series. And finally, a quickie, Jane Lynch and Cyndi Lauper will collaborate on a new Netflix comedy, details still to come. And coming up in our next half hour, we'll have a complete recap of the first round of Primetime Emmy Award winners that took place over the weekend in Los Angeles. And now, that's news notes for today. If I were to just name the title of our first subject, Murder in the Bayou, what would you conclude? I'm talking about where you think it would run. Investigation Discovery? HBO? Oxygen? A&E? Lifetime? You know, networks that carry a lot of unscripted reality programming. Well, if that was your impression, you would be wrong. Because Murder in the Bayou is the latest example of Showtime's new move into unscripted television. A couple weeks ago, they launched a series called Couples Therapy, whose executive producers were on this program in early September. Now, last Friday, they offered this show. It's their first ever true crime miniseries, and it runs at 9 p.m. Eastern and Pacific Time on Showtime. And joining us live in New York to talk about it are the director and writer, respectively, of this unique miniseries, Matthew Gulkin and Ethan Brown. Matthew and Ethan, come on in.
How you doing?
Hi, how are you?
Excellent, fine. Thank you both for coming aboard. Well, Matthew, we'll start with you. How did you get involved in putting this series together with Ethan?
So I work with someone named Matt Kafritz, who does development for my company. And he was the one who found Ethan Brown's book, Murder in the Bayou, in 2016. And we were both very taken by this story of eight women who were all, you know, friends in some way, who were murdered in one very small town of 10,000 people in rural Louisiana between the years 2005 and 2009. And we just thought that there was more to explore. We thought Ethan Brown's book was incredible. And seeing that we make documentaries and documentary series for a living, we just wanted to dive deeper in. And so we engaged Ethan Brown in a conversation, and ultimately we partnered up, and here we are 3 years later.
Ethan, how long did it take to investigate this case and then put your book together?
Great question. Yeah, I started looking at this in the summer of 2011, and the book was published in the fall of 2016. So just a bit over 5 years there.
And what about this case intrigued you enough to put in all that time?
Yeah, so this case really became intriguing to me from the moment I started looking at it in 2011. I went out to Jeff Davis Parish that summer just to have a look at the case, really not with nothing in mind in terms of an article or a book or anything like that. And I spent a couple of weeks out there meeting with the families. And in that very short time, I was just instantly hooked and connected to this case. The family members, the victims, were so wonderful and compelling. And so, you know, you would think in such an odd place like this that folks would not be relatable. But I found them very relatable and just so open and just compassionate and amazing. And then you have this like sprawling mystery that involves eight homicides over a period of 4 years, 2005 to 2009, all of which remained unsolved. So it was really those two things.
Were the victims, Ethan, all considered like key members of the community, like people that other people looked up to?
Were the victims people that other people looked up to? You know,
yes, yeah, so like followers of the community, people who were like were highly regarded in the area.
These were people who were very much loved in the community. They were a central part of the south sort of part of town. There's this town Jennings is really split by its north and south sides. They were a very key part of the south side of town. They all had large families. Oftentimes, they were even related to one another. They were socially very connected. So, you know, this is not somebody who's, you know, on city council or the member of some kind of prominent social club. But these are people who are, you know, very deeply rooted and loved in their community.
Murder in the Bayou is Showtime's first effort at true crime miniseries presentation. And it's on Friday night, starting last Friday. We'll continue with episode two this Friday at 9 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time. We're talking with the two people who made it happen, director Matthew Galkin and the writer of the book, which the series is based on, author Ethan Brown. They both join us live here in New York this half hour on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. We're happy you are aboard for the ride this Monday afternoon right here on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, and the IR Radio Podcast Network. Simon Applebaum with you live from the Big Apple, and we want to hear from you. So give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. You know, we're on Monday and Friday at this very hour, and coming up on Friday's episode, we will hear from the creator executive producer of the new NBC legal drama starring Jimmy Smith that premieres 1 week from today. It's called Bluff City Law. It's Jimmy Smith's first NBC series since way back with The West Wing. Gene Gilgamesh will be with us. And also, we'll meet one of the the top directors of unscripted and game show television, Ivan Uditsky. His credits include To Tell the Truth, Sunday Nights on ABC, Songland, the new NBC series that somebody just got renewed for a second season, and Hollywood Game Night with Jane Lynch. What you may not know is that he runs his own production company, and that company is looking at doing two ideas that may turn into services that may pop up on your smart TV set or smart TV device. Ivan Uditsky will join us along with Dean Gregonis from Bluff City Law. That's all coming up Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Matthew, once you were able to go forward with this series, what was the most important thing that you wanted to do to illustrate this case?
Well, initially, the most important thing, without question, and something that Ethan helped me with, was forging relationships with the family members and the friends of all of these victims. It was incredibly important to us as filmmakers to be able to give them a platform to tell their stories as sort of unfiltered and raw as we could possibly do it. These are people that a lot of them had never been able to tell their story, even, you know, according to them, through the investigation of these 8 murders. So giving them an audience and a platform to tell us what they knew and to bring to life these victims was very, very important to us. These were girls, these were women that they were, you know, from a documentary point of view, were very sort of under-documented. There was no footage of them. There were very few photos of them. So to actually bring them to life for a viewer, we relied almost exclusively on testimonials from the family members and the friends to kind of paint pictures of who these women were. And so that was, at level one, the most important aspect of making this documentary. On top of that, doing justice to Ethan's research, because he had spent 5 years pulling thousands of records and documents and weaving this incredible tale. Doing justice to that visually and in the documentary was a big challenge, but it's something that was very important to us because we had a lot of backup, as they say, based on Ethan's work. You know, people's understanding of these cases is due almost exclusively to Ethan Brown's tireless work and research.
We have somebody who just joined our chat room, Simon Apple 04 by name. Thanks for coming aboard. You have a question or comment for Matthew or Ethan, either put it in the room and we'll get to it, or give us a call, 646-652-2906. Ethan, when it came time to approach these family members into putting themselves on camera and relating their side of the situation, did they come to it with a sense of trust or a sense of distrust? Because this time, it's one thing to put their thoughts down in writing. It's another thing for them to say what they need to say in front of a camera.
Right, yeah. I mean, I can't speak for the families, but I think that they came to it with a sense of trust because I had spent so many years out there sort of back and forth in the town. And certainly, yes, like exactly what you're saying, that there's a huge difference between speaking to a reporter, that information is written down. You're not pictured anywhere. Your face isn't anywhere. So there's a huge difference between that and going on screen. And I think, I hope that, you know, some of the trust that I built over the years allowed people to feel comfortable with sitting with Matthew. And I think and hope, again, that you can see that in the series itself. I think that the interviews are really very emotional, very raw, very intimate, very personal. And I think the sort of basis for that is, you know, both like Matthew and company's great work in making people feel comfortable, but also just the sense of like Ethan's been around for years and there's a comfort level with this that we might not have otherwise.
Yeah, and Simon, let me just jump in. This is Matthew.
Sure.
Without question, Ethan's you know, the years he spent down there made my job so much easier because, you know, in my past, it would take me months, if not years, to get the kind of access that Ethan had. And so it was invaluable. His relationships down there for me were invaluable.
And Matthew, what kind of cooperation did you get from local authorities to get where they're at with this case?
So that was also very important to us right from the start, is to forge our own relationship with the Jeff Davis Parish Sheriff's Office. And so, you know, from the beginning, I was very upfront with them as far as what the project was. And, you know, we invited them to sit for an interview because we had felt like having them tell at least their side of the story was crucial to the case. I mean, everybody seems to have a theory or an opinion of what's going on, and we wanted to give law enforcement the opportunity to represent theirs on camera, and they accepted. You know, it took a while. There were a lot of conversations. Obviously, they are seemingly slightly distrustful of the media because they didn't quite understand, or, you know, they didn't know what angle we were going to be taking on in this series. They knew that Ethan and I were working together. They had their own opinions about Ethan's book. But we wanted, you know, we wanted at least to them to separate out the series from the book. The series is based on the book, but it also goes further than that, knowing that these investigations are ongoing and have sort of, you know, been ongoing since Ethan published the book in 2016. So they accepted the invitation to be part of this, and they sat for numerous interviews, and they helped us periodically with various things in the film as far as bringing us out to the sites where the women were, where the women's bodies were found, and other things. So, you know, it was ultimately a fine relationship.
Ethan, were there things that you couldn't cover in the book that you invited Matthew and his production crew to explore?
Yes, there were things that I couldn't cover in the book that I invited Matthew and company to explore. So there had been an article that I published in 2014 that was the basis for the book. And my feeling after publishing the article was, wow, there's just so much here that I can't cover in the article. It's just so big, you know, it's just sprawling. And that was really the motivation for me wanting to do a book about this. It was not like, you know, wouldn't it be a great sort of flashy thing for me to do for my career? It was like, there's just so much, I felt like I had to do it. Almost like I was kind of duty bound to continue with this. And I had a similar feeling, really, to be honest, very similar feeling with Matthew and the documentary. It was like, I had published the book in 2016 that fall. Matthew and his folks approached me soon after. And by that time, it wasn't really too much after the book was published, but I had been gathering information in the fall of 2016 after the publication of the book. And I was really thinking, you know, there's so much here, more, you know, that it didn't capture in the book or the original article, that like, I want to bring Matthew and his team in on this and develop like so many different pieces that I'd been able to just sort of, you know, get a little bit of my hooks into post-publication and just let them run wild with it. So there's a lot, almost sort of like countless things, yeah. Really.
Matthew, as I suggested in the opener, the opening tease, this is new territory for Showtime to do unscripted programming on Friday nights. During that prime time period from 8 to 11 o'clock. How did this program get to Showtime?
The short answer is we pitched it to them, and they responded to it very quickly. You know, I had a previous relationship with Vinnie Malhotra, who is the executive vice president of nonfiction at Showtime. And, you know, I had a hunch that he would spark to this idea. I knew that they had never done true crime, so even our agents were like, yeah, it's going to be a real long shot. But, you know, knowing what I know about Vinny and knowing the taste that he has, I knew that they had never done true crime because he doesn't, you know, they weren't really looking for sort of past tense cold cases. And the idea that you could watch this series and Google it and not know how it ends while you're watching it, I think was of interest to him. He really, really responded to this sort of central mystery of what happened to these girls. He also responded to the world itself. You know, when you watch the series, you'll see the people that inhabit this world are incredibly dynamic characters, and I don't mean characters like a scripted show, but they're very dynamic, and they are incredibly good storytellers, especially of their own lives, which is very rare. And I've been doing this for almost 20 years, and I've never documented a population of people that are consistently as skilled at telling their own story. And so, for all of these reasons, they were interested. And lucky for us, because they've been incredible partners on this.
Did they, given the fact you have, it's a five-part miniseries, did they give you any thoughts about how to structure the miniseries, like what to emphasize in episode one versus two, three, four, and so on?
No. I mean, that was very much dictated by us, by me and my producer, Josh Levine, and Matt Kaeffertz, who I mentioned earlier, and Ethan as well. You know, we had a very clear idea of how we wanted to let this story unfold. And it, you know, in some ways it adheres to Ethan's book, and in other ways it diverges wildly. But we thought from a sort of for a 5-hour arc that there was a very specific way we wanted to do it. And we presented that plan on paper to Showtime and they signed off on it. And, you know, within a few weeks after that, we were in production.
You're hearing the director and the writer of Murder in the Bayou. It's Showtime's first attempt at true crime programming, and it's on Friday night, episode number two, tonight, 9:10 Pacific time. We're talking with director Matthew Gulkin and writer Ethan Brown, who also wrote the book on which this miniseries is based, and they're both live with us from New York this half hour on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Simon Applebaum with you live from the Big Apple. Delighted you're with us. Night in the edition for you to kick off your week. And if you have a question or a comment on our meeting minutes with Matthew and Ethan, by all means, make the phone ring, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. If it's your first time hearing the promo about television, we've had some wonderful guests so far this month, including producers and creators of such shows as Wu-Tang, American Saga, Kids Say the Darndest Thing, coming to ABC next month, Prodigal Son, coming to Fox as well next week, and much, much more. So what you have to do is go to our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised, or check out the version on podcast. It's available at iHeartRadio.com. Go to that website, put Tomorrow Will Be Televised in the search bar, click and you got it. Or go to categories at the top of the screen, click entertainment, and you got it that well, got it that way as well. And we're also available on podcasts on iTunes, Apple TV, if you have an Apple TV smart TV device, or the Spreaker podcast app. Any which way you do it, check it out, and we'd love to hear from you. Your feedback, as always, is welcome. Ethan, since episode one ran on Friday night, have you gotten any feedback about the series? And more importantly, has it led to some people, for example, contacting you or Matthew about some possible leads?
Yeah, I have gotten feedback. It's been interesting. The folks in the area who've given me feedback have lived this, obviously, right? Even though, you know, even the folks that have not lost somebody in this, they really lived it. And it's been interesting. They've said things like, you know, this is my life, this is my home, but like, I'm so curious to see where this ends. Not meaning where the investigation ends, but meaning like where the series ends, which is really like fascinating to me because it's like, I think you know largely where it ends because you've lived it, you know, but they're so kind of compelled and engaged with the documentary that they are just like very willing to spend the next several weeks following it. You know, so that's really wonderful. And then, you know, sort of conversely, the folks that I hear from who know nothing about this, and this is their first sort of entry point into the case, they are just stunned to see, I think Matthew hit it fairly well, like, you know, this a world that is so undocumented, not only be sort of captured on camera, but captured in this really beautiful way, both in terms of like the physical beauty of this area and then the intimacy and very personal nature of the interviews. So, you know, the folks who are really not familiar with this area or this case at all are sort of stunned to see this whole world unfold in front of them.
For both of you, one final question. Is there hope? Is there a sense that this program could trigger, maybe at long last, the road towards solving this case and everybody having closure from it?
I can only speak on for myself, but absolutely, I have hope. You know, this is probably the most all-encompassing version of anyone ever telling this story, and it goes beyond Ethan's book. It presents as much information as we could possibly present in 5 hours. And we have hope that, you know, the proper pressure will be placed on the systems of power that are in place there in order to, you know, it'll be to be determined whether the people who committed these crimes are actually brought to justice. But we think that there's a larger target here, which is to fix the system from within to make sure that these types of things don't ever happen again.
In what way?
Well, that there are certain protections from what we have found. There are certain protections down there, the sort of relationships between law enforcement and certain factions that maybe are on the other sides of the law, and there are systems of power above law enforcement. There are certain political pressures. There are many reasons to us why these 8 cases were never solved, and it doesn't all have to do with shoddy detective work.
Yeah, I think that's right, to pick up where Matthew left off there. I think there's so many failures in this case that need to be corrected. There is a failure to solve them, right? There are like very glaring failures in the investigation itself. And then there are like the ways in which various institutions failed these women when they were alive. There's an amazing quote, and I hope I'm getting it right, from the mother of victim number 8, Nicole Guillory. Her mother, Barbara, says something like, Nicole's second home was the jail. And, you know, in this area, in this place, if you're a person who is poor, if you're a person who struggles with anything from mental health issues to substance use disorder, the jail is your second home. Problems like this, social problems, are dealt with through the jail, and the women were very much dealt with and failed in that respect. So I hope that the documentary can sort of shine a light on the failures in the investigation, the failure to solve this, and then the many ways that these women were failed by institutions.
Murder on the Bayou. It's Showtime's first experiment in true crime miniseries television. And you can see it tonight, episode number 2, 9:30 Pacific time. Check your local to where Showtime is available in your area on cable and satellite. For more details about the program online, go to www.sho.com. That's www.sho.com. Murder in the Bayou, tonight, episode 2, 9 Kenyan Pacific time. And obviously, anyone out there who may have information that has not been disclosed about this case, please get in touch with local authorities. Make a difference. Your information could be the turn of the case that makes it go toward a conclusion. Director Matthew Galkin, writer Ethan Brown, thank you both very, very much for coming on the program. Ethan, thank you for all the work you put in to bring this case to light. And Matthew, same thing with you and your production team. And let's hope that this documentary begins the road toward having not just immediate justice for everyone involved in that area, but long-lasting justice as well.
Thanks, Evan.
Thank you so much.
You're very, very welcome, Matthew. And keep in touch with us about how the case goes post the show airing. We really appreciate it. Take care. Matthew Galkin and Ethan Brown from Showtime's Murder in the Bayou joining us live from New York. When we come back, we'll have a recap of the Primetime Emmy Awards that were given out this weekend, round number one. Don't forget the second round, the big round with the major categories. That's coming up this Sunday night on Fox, 8 p.m. to 11 p.m. Eastern and Pacific time also. And we'll also have our classic trivia question of the week. I'll offer some thoughts about two events that I saw over this weekend, both very interesting and, in one case, very, very important. And we'll also have our show to know for today. It's another animated series that you want to know about called Undone from a former Disney master, Michael Eisner. So all that coming your way in the next half hour. We'll get to all of that after we pause at the bottom of the hour for web identification. You're listening to the best internet radio on the planet, www.blogtalkradio and www.spreaker.com. Together, they reach more than 35 million listeners around the world every month and growing. BTR Spreaker, your home for the Father Matters Show. If you want to be a better parent, really a better father, you might want to check it out. It's on tomorrow at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific, the Father Matters Show, right here exclusively on Blog Talk Radio and Spreaker. And remember, back to BTR available 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to Marvin Televised, second half hour of our 90th edition coming your way to kick off your week on this Monday afternoon. 75 degrees, top of the hour. Simon Appel with you live from the Big Apple. Hope that you're having a good start to your week. We have another great guest coming your way at the top of the hour. And in between, a lot of interesting TV stuff to bring you, including, very shortly, our classic trivia question of the week and a recap of the first round of the Primetime Emmy Awards that were presented over this weekend in Los Angeles. Before we get to all that, let's give you some words from the fine folks at our sponsor, Audible.com. Do you want to be a better parent? Are there certain habits that you have that you would like to get rid of, and there's some habits that you see other people benefiting from that you want them to be yours? Well, there's a wonderful audiobook out by a man named James Clear called Atomic Habits. It's all about getting rid of those baddies and getting those goodies in existence for you. And you can get that book right now in audio form with a trial run of Audible.com. Audible.com is the leading provider of spoken digital audio information, entertainment, and certainly inspiration. There's over 180,000 titles to choose from. You listen to them on any device, including whatever you are hearing us on right now at Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, and iHeartRadio. And guess what? That catalog also includes a growing number of special titles that are called Audible Originals. It's everything from original audio productions, the best on Broadway, off-Broadway, and regional theater from around the country, and one-woman, one-man shows, made especially for Audible. And the great thing is, you can get right now, not one, not two, but in this trial run, three audiobooks, two of them are originals. And when you decide to become a subscriber, you can get the same thing, two Audible originals and another audiobook, all of your choice. And remember, like I said, you can hear them on any device, including whatever you are hearing this right now at Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, or iHeartRadio. And all you got to do is sign up at audibletrial.com/televised. That's audibletrial.com/televised. And remember, great, great one-month trial and great customer service, too, in the trial from the fine folks at Audible's parent, Amazon.com. So, hear for yourself, maybe today, how audible.com can transform the way you hear the world. For those three free audiobooks, two of them are the originals, one-month trial, great customer service, all in a super package for you, audibletrial.com/televise. Now let's get to our classic trivia question of the week, second week that we are doing this particular question. And once again, we're offering as our prize the wonderful book coming up, The 3-Minute Rule, Say Less to Any Pitch, Get More, actually, from Any Pitch or Presentation. It's by a previous TMZ guest a couple weeks ago, Unscripted TV author, executive, and producer Brant Condivic. Here's the question. Very simple. Name the Brady Bunch's pet. You know, the Brady Bunch has the Very Brady Revolution, Very Brady Renovation, currently on Home and Garden Television. First episode did very, very well. We had two HD executives on 2 weeks ago to talk about it. Well, that is how we got up with the question. Once again, the question, name the Brady Bunch's pet. We're looking for both the name of the pet and the type of pet. Have to go together. And if you're first with the correct answer, you win the three-minute rule. Say less to get more from any pitch or presentation by Brant Condivic. And all you have to do is email me with the answer. That's email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. That's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Don't forget, when you email, enclose your name and your full mailing address. So if you win, we can get the prize out to you as soon as possible. If you just missed the question a moment ago, we'll try to bring it back before we wrap up today's episode. If not, we'll post it tomorrow on Facebook and on Twitter at UBC Simon TWBT. That's the UBC Simon TWBT. That's our Twitter handle, and we always like to hear from you if you use it. So, remember, what you got to do to be part of our classic trivia question of the week is put your answer down in email and email it to yours truly, simonapple04@yahoo.com. Remember, in order to win, like we say around here, you got to be in. So get in the game, and all the very best. This coming Sunday night, Fox will present the Primetime Emmy Awards live from Los Angeles. They'll be on from 8 to 11 p.m. Eastern Time, and I believe they'll be on both 5 to 8 Pacific Time, live to both coasts, as well as the 8 to 11 p.m. Pacific Time on tape delay. But because there are so many Emmy categories, that you only get like 25, 26 on in those 3 hours, all those other categories are given out the weekend before what's called the Creative Arts Ceremony. Until a couple years ago, it used to be one ceremony for all those awards. But they were very, very long and long and long and long. So they decided, well, let's cut it in half, and we'll give some on Saturday night and some on Sunday night. And that's exactly what they did over the last 2 nights in Los Angeles. So let's give you a quick recap of what went down with this year's first round of the Primetime Emmy Awards. First, let's tell you how individual series did. Game of Thrones came into the Primetime Emmys with more than 30 nominations. It is the biggest nominated program in series history as far as individual series go. And it did not disappoint. Game of Thrones won 10 awards. That's right, 10 awards, and it is the number one individual series right now in play going into this coming Sunday night. In number two, it's a tie. And believe it or not, these are two shows that, well, at first glance, you might not expect them to get so many awards. One of them is another HBO program. It's the miniseries Chernobyl. Now, going in, a lot of people thought that a lot of the miniseries categories would go to When They See Us, that the Ava DuVernay-directed miniseries on Netflix. That was not the case. Chernobyl did really well. It got 7 awards, including many on the technical level. The other big surprise, also getting 7 awards, was from National Geographic, Free Solo, the documentary special, you know, the guy that was climbing up the mountain. The mountain was like straight up. Amazing talent and amazing footage, and sure enough, got 7 awards for its work. And incidentally, Nat Geo did very, very well. More about that in terms of how it did the network in a bit. And in the number 3 spot, with 6 awards, the Barbara Smith-Maisel from Amazon, including a number for guest performances. So once again, in terms of individual series, Game of Thrones, number 1 with 10 awards, tied for number 2 between HBO Chernobyl and Nat Geo's Free Solo special, and in number 3 with 6 awards, The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. By the way, Queer Eye for the Straight Guy, the revival on Netflix, did very well. 4 awards, including Best Structured Reality Program. Another surprise winner was United States of America, the CNN series starring Kamau Bell. It won 2 awards, one of them for Unstructured Reality Program. Another nice winner was State of the Union, the short-form series that was running on Sundance TV. 3 awards for that. Also, doing pretty good, RuPaul's Drag Race. Yes, RuPaul won again for Best Host of a Reality Show on VH1. 3 awards for that. 3 awards also went to FX for Fosse Vernon, the miniseries about the relationship between the great dancer-choreographer Bob Fosse and his protege, and Muse, Wedderburn, beautifully played by Michelle Williams, Foxy played by Sam Rockwell. That got three awards. SNL, Saturday Night Live, four awards in the technical categories. And there were some shows that also broke through as well. One Day at a Time for Netflix broke through for camera work for a multi-camera show. Star Trek Discovery won for prosthetic makeup. The World of Dance show on NBC got choreography. Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, the CW, which usually doesn't get a lot of Emmy awards, did win one for one of its songs in the final season. And The Handmaid's Tale, which qualified because some of its episodes did make the Emmy deadline for season two, that won three awards as well. In terms of individual programs getting individual awards, The Simpsons received the award for animated series. The Single Kids program went to a Sesame Street special. Our Planet, the Netflix series, won for nonfiction series, and it won another award as well. The critically acclaimed HBO documentary Leaving Neverland about Michael Jackson won nonfiction special. And Anthony Bourdain, Parts Unknown, the CNN series hosted by the late Anthony Bourdain, won for information service series. And also, Bourdain won a posthumous award for writing. Also, NASA Television won for an interactive program. I mentioned Queer Eye with the Structured Reality show. Unstructured Reality went to Kamau Bell's U.S. of America. The Variety Special Award went to live in front of a studio audience, the ABC Special, featuring the redone episodes of All in the Family and the Jeffersons. And it was also historic because Norman Lear, the co-executive producer of that special, who was also seen on the program with host Jimmy Kimmel, became the oldest living Emmy Award winner at 96 years old. Once again, Norman Lear now makes Emmy history as the oldest living Emmy Award winner at 96 years old for co-executive producing and co-hosting live in front of a studio audience. By the way, ABC is going to work on at least two more specials in that vein, content determined later on. And for tape variety special, the winner was the Carpool Karaoke special with James Corden on CBS. So there you have it, the individual series and programs and how they did over the last two nights at the Creative Arts Emmy Awards for 2019. Well, as far as the individual services went, here's how it did. A lot of people, of course, HBO, Netflix, back and forth in terms of getting awards this year as it is last year. And so far, HBO has the lead with 25 Emmy Awards. They're in first place. Netflix is in second with 16. And once again, there's a tie, this time for third. Amazon, largely on the basis of Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, got 8. And National Geo, on the basis of the 7 for Free Zone, won also 8 awards. The other one was for Life Below Zero, its ongoing series. So once again, HBO, the leader among programming services, with 25, Netflix second place 16, Amazon and Nat Geo tied for third with 8. And NBC, thanks to Saturday Night Live, the leader among the broadcast networks with 6 Emmy Awards. CW with 1, CBS with 3, ABC with 1, Fox with 4. And CBS All Access, because of the Star Trek Discovery Award, they have 1. And Apple, by the way, which ran an episode of Carpool Karaoke, they won as well. We should also point out that the Black Mirror episode that really put Netflix on the interactive services map, Bandersnatch, did win in one of the categories. It is up for, of course, as you know, the made-for-TV movie situation. And once again, while I think Bandersnatch definitely deserved an interactive program category win, it should not be up in the made-for-TV movie category because it's not a made-for-TV movie. It is an episode of a television series. And they should have put it in a different category to make it happen. We'll see what happens next Sunday night. Will Bandersnatch win that made-for-TV movie category? No matter what you think about the fact it was nominated there. Again, Fox will present the Primetime Emmy Awards on Sunday night, 8 to 11 p.m. Eastern Time, 5 to 8 and 8 to 11 Pacific Time. Of course, it will time may be approximate because it will come right after next week's NFL Sunday afternoon schedule of games. So, again, check your local, the Fox Station area. This is counting the Primetime Emmys, and be prepared. The show may start late because of overrun of NFL football. All right. Once again, I want to remind you that coming up on Tomorrow Be Televised on Friday, we got a good one for you. We will have the creator executive producer of the new NBC legal drama that premieres, I believe, next Monday, Bluff City Law, starring Jimmy Smith, Dean Reganis. And we will have popular unscripted and game show director Ivan Nadinsky. His credits include To Tell the Truth, this episode was on ABC last night, the popular new summer series from NBC, Songland, just got renewed for a second season, and Hollywood Game Night, the ongoing series hosted by Jane Lynch. And he has his own production company called Deviance Media, and working on two projects there that may end up being services on your smart TV set or smart TV device sooner rather than later. By the way, he's married to Audrey Morrissey, the executive producer of the long-running NBC series The Voice. Audrey was on our show a year or so ago, and it'll be fun to hear about how Audrey works with Ivan on his project. So once again, Dean Urbanus from Buffy Law and NBC, Ivan Nadinsky will be with us. That's Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern New Pacific right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. And once again, we'd love to hear from you, so give us a call, 646-652-2906. I want to welcome somebody who just came to our chat room, Simon Apple 04 by name. Use the phone or the room. Either way, we will hear you. I've had a couple of interesting experiences over this weekend here in New York. On Saturday, I went to, for the second time, the Tribeca TV Festival, and I went to see an unusual project that was put together through PepsiCo and one of its fine products, Gatorade. It's called Cantera 5x5. Cantera is the name of an event that is now taking place all over the world, and it's a situation where boys and girls, sort of in their preteen teen years, have the opportunity to play on five-person soccer teams and compete, first of all, in their host country, and then compete in a world finals. The show deals with, I believe, a five-episode miniseries. It was put together by Jeff and Michael Zimbalist of a company called All Rise Films. They've done work for ESPN and from other people as well. It was an interesting concept to see being showcased. Gatorade sponsors the tournament along with PepsiCo, and it takes place, I believe, this year's tournament took place in South America. And so what they did was the filmmakers spotlighted five teams, one person each team, and showcased how they did in the tournament, win, lose, or draw. I came in the middle because of another thing I had to do on Saturday afternoon, and I have to say it was an interesting experience to see this program and then to catch the Q&A discussion afterward, which I thought went all over the map. They had both people from PepsiCo and Gatorade there. They had Jeff and Michael on the panel. They also had two popular soccer stars, including the great men's player Landon Donovan, who was on the U.S. men's team that competed in recent World Cups. What was fascinating to me was people were referring to it as a film as opposed to a television series. And it wasn't made clear, I think, by the moderator whether it was one or the other. And by the way, when people saw it at the Tribeca TV Festival over at the regional Battery Park Cinemas, beautiful place, by the way, Battery Park City, gorgeous state-of-the-art seats, wonderful amenities, really, really great location. Not far from the subway, near the, right across from Ground Zero at the World Trade Center. I thought the photography and all that was really, really good. However, one thing that the moderator never said was, where is this program going to run? Is it going to run on Univision or Telemundo or ESPN Deportes? Because many of the participants that were spotlighted spoke Spanish, and they had English subtitles when they were speaking at the bottom of the screen, or would it be on ESPN or Fox Sports 1 somewhere? The person moderating never asked that question, and so we're left with the mystery of where is this thing going to run? And secondly, the film, the series, may have missed a big opportunity to showcase a major advancement in soccer in the United States, which is that the boys from the United States won the men's tournament. That's right, won the men's tournament. I won't tell you how it's totally showcased, but I found it very infuriating that it was not handled in a way that I think it really deserved. I mean, here you have a male team competing in this event. Wonderful event, by the way. We went very well staged, too. And they win. They beat the best in the world, 5x5, and not much. It's like, it's a side thought. No, it's not a side thought. It deserved to get covered a lot better than it was. The other thing I took issue with the filmmakers about was the music score. Not the fact that the music score was bad. It was actually very good. But the fact it was too much music, and it sort of came off like a telenovela, where the music editor slapped the film, the score on the film, and not noticing what's going on. We heard very little natural sound, very little reaction when people won or people lost. I felt that the music was trying to be a little bit too melodramatic, and we didn't hear enough of the crowd sound. However, I still recommend seeing this miniseries. Again, it's called Cantera 5x5. Congrats to the Tribeca TV Festival for having this. It was a special event, by the way, that they had a different there were different publicists working on this. We're going to try to get a hold of the publicist for this and find out where this is going to run, and maybe on Friday we will let you know where that will be. But even with the flaws, I think this is a very worthwhile project, and I want to congratulate the filmmakers as well as PepsiCo and Gatorade for authorizing the project and making it happen. And then yesterday, I went to the premiere of IFP Week. That's the week where independent filmmakers and TV makers showcase their wares, make pitches to all sorts of people in the film and TV industry. And it kicked off with a Future of Entertainment or State of Entertainment conference. And the opening speaker was someone who I wanted to have on this program. He's Tyler Mitchell, and he is the head of a very innovative organization called Imagine Impact. Yes, it's from Imagine, the production company headed by Brian Grazer and Ron Howard. It was put together over a year ago with the idea of bringing more people into writing for television and writing for film, given the tremendous appetite that we all have, thanks to Netflix, Hulu, Amazon, et cetera, and all the new services that are coming up through smart TV sets and devices, from Apple TV Plus to BET Plus, which is going to launch on Thursday, and so much more, that they decided, well, let's take a page from venture capitalists, organizations like 500 Startups and Techstars and Y Combinator, and let's see if we can get scripts that would, in other people's hands, not even be looked at because they would be considered unsolicited and you can't read them because of red tape, you know, you have to have an agent and so forth to solicit and so on. So Impact was launched over a year ago. And here's the way it works. They process thousands of film and TV show ideas and scripts a week. Right now, over 2,000. Think about this. 2,000 scripts for prospective films and TV shows get read by Impact people a week. And they want to go to 5,000, incidentally, by the end of the year. And then what they do is, from that group, they pick anywhere from like 12 to 20, 24 writers from all over the world, bring them to Los Angeles for an 8-week course where they're given showrunners, both from film and television, the best in the business, to work with. They get training. They get workspaces to develop their project. And then, like a Y Combinator, like a venture capital demo day, they get a chance to demo their work before hundreds of people in the film and TV industry. So far, they've gone through two of these impact cycles, and they have so far processed, get this, 11,000 projects from more than 80 countries. And so far, they have developed 44 projects in 9 months. Think about that, over 40 individual film and TV projects, some of which have been sold to the likes of Netflix, Amazon, Steven Spielberg's production company Amblin, independent producers, and many others. And some of the showrunners that these folks work with in that 8-week course, they love what they see so much, they want to stay mentoring, or they would say, hey, come on into my production company, we'll develop your project here. It's really, really super. And the third impact cycle has just started, and it's really amazing. The impact so far among industry players is, we like what you're seeing, we like what we get, let's have more of this. And the ultimate long-term goal of impact is to not only make a difference in terms of the kind of television that we can see, the kind of new writing and producing and directing talent that can come forward from all over the world, but also not just with scripted shows, but unscripted, children's programming, family programming, video games, podcasts, etc. The whole gamut of entertainment. So it was a pleasure to hear Tyler. I met him afterward. I'm invited to come on the show. Hopefully he will in the next couple of weeks, and to hear more about Imagine Impact. But keep your eye on this project. This project could very well be, given what is going on, this explosion of original programming and services, a very big contributor to bringing new talent into television and diverse talent. By the way, they are very committed to diversity and inclusion. And I say that given the fact that this is, of course, Diversity Week. And it's very interesting that IFP Week and Diversity Week are running simultaneously as we speak here in New York. And if you want to know more about IFP, go to ifp.org. They're having events. If you're in the New York area, particularly in Brooklyn, come on down. I hope to go to one either on Wednesday or Thursday. Really, really terrific stuff. And if you want to hear our interview that we did with two of the IFP Week organizers, go to our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised, or go for the podcast version on iTunes, Apple TV, Spreaker's podcast app, and, of course, iHeartRadio.com. And again, congratulations to the folks behind Diversity Week, particularly today, the Women in Cable Conference. Over 800 people going to that conference right now as we speak at the Marriott Marquis Hotel. 1,200 showed up at their Touchstone Luncheon. That's a brand new record. Really, really great deal. And again, congratulations to the organizers of IFP Week for getting off the ground so far with their State of Entertainment Conference. And again, a pleasure to meet Tyler Mitchell, the head of Imagine Impact. And what they're doing under Brian Grazer and Ron Howard on all levels is really, really outstanding. And finally, in this half hour, let's give you a show to know. As a program that we think is worth your while, and you may not know about it because it's not well marketed, promoted, publicized, or falls on the radar screen of critics and journalists. This one actually has not. In a few minutes, we're going to be hearing from Emily Spivey, the creator executive producer of the new Fox tune, Bless the Hearts. Well, our show to know this week is another tune that premiered this past Friday, and it's available on Amazon. And it's called Undone. And it's a very different kind of tune. You might want to call it a space time warp weird genre type tune. And it's a tune that's put together by some of the people behind BoJack Horseman, the long-running Netflix hit. It's one woman's journey through all sorts of spaces and all sorts of time periods. And what makes this show unique is the animation style. It involves hand-painted backgrounds and a technique called rotoscoping, which makes the animation look more and more human. It may remind you of the Polar Express using motion capture to really get the facial features of the people involved. It was put together, and it also stars a wonderful talent named Rosa Salazar. She's the star. She also helped put the show together, including the rotoscoping process, and I've seen clips of it. It's stunning, really, really stunning. So once again, it's Undone, and it's now available on Amazon. Amazon Prime. Remember, Amazon is available on smart TV sets and smart TV devices, most models and most devices. And for more details about the show online, go to www.amazonstudios.com. It's www.amazonstudios.com. Is there a TV series or special that you want more attention for, that you like? Well, we want to give it that attention here on Tawabi Talk, but we can't read your mind. You got to talk to us. And if you do, and we use suggestion on the air, you get the credit. So email me, SimonApple04@yahoo.com. That's SimonApple04@yahoo.com. Don't forget to enclose your name, where you're emailing from. Remember, that's how you get involved in our Class of Trinity Question of the Week. If we get a chance, we'll repeat the question and the prize that's involved. And, of course, you can use that email to inform us about a show to know you'd like to hear on Tawabi Talk. Don't forget, you can also follow me on Facebook and follow me on Twitter at UBCSimonTWBG. That's my Twitter handle, at UBCSimonTWBG. CWBT. By the way, just got another person into our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. So be involved. Put your whatever you want to think or whatever your comment is, put it in the room or give us a call, 646-652-2906. One final time, Undone. It's from Michael Eisner's Toriyaki Company. Is the name familiar? Yes, that's the former head of Walt Disney. Michael Eisner has done some pretty good work with his Toriyaki Company. I believe this is the first animation project. Once again, Undone, now available on Amazon Prime, www.amazonstudios.com. This is Tawabi Televised. We are the program All About the Tube. Happy to have you with us on this Monday afternoon, kicking off your week. Big week here in New York. We got Diversity Week. We have the launch of BET Plus and Apple Arcade on Thursday. We've got the Urban World Film Festival Conference, also doing TV stuff as well with their digital conference as well on Thursday. We have also some other special events going on throughout the week. So if you're in town, a lot of good things to see. Tomorrow, NAMIC Conference kicks off at the Marriott Marquis. Women in Cables Conference wraps up on tomorrow afternoon, and a whole lot more. And by the way, I'm also very excited about the opportunity on Wednesday to do an ad agency conversation over lunchtime down on 23rd Street in the Chelsea District. So thank you to one of my favorite people in the world of TV, Professor Al Lieberman from New York University's Stern School of Business. He's also involved with the Future of Television Forum that takes place annually at the Museum of Jewish Heritage at Barry Park City. And that's, by the way, going on 1 week from tomorrow. I think the best conference they put together in a long, long time. Future TV Forum. For more details, www.televisionconference.com. When we come back, there's a brand new attraction on the animation domination scene at Fox. It's called Bless the Heart, and it premieres on September 29th. And we will have the creator executive producer, Emily Spivey, joins us live from L.A. after we pause at the top of the hour for web identification. You're listening to Best Internet Radio in the Galaxy, www.blogtalkradioandspreaker.com. More than 35 million listeners around the world every month and growing. Don't forget tonight at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 Central, it's On the Mic. That's right. If you want to hear some funky music and great entertainment, check out On the Mic tonight, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. I think reggae is the subject tonight, Jamaican reggae, for that matter. And again, it's On the Mic. Be on it tonight, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, only on Blog Talk Radio and Speaker. Don't forget, Best Feature on Speaker 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to the final half hour of Tomorrow Be Televised this Monday afternoon. Well, the Vigilance Journey is the top of the hour. Simon Abbott with you live from New Web, New York, 75 degrees at the top of the hour. Great guests coming your way in this half hour ahead. We invite you to be part of the program if you're just joining us. So ring it in, 646-652-2906. Or use our chat room, Simon Abbott, 04. My name, welcome to the people already in the room. Put your question or comment in the room or give us that call. Either way, we will hear you. Coming up on September 29th, Fox will have a new attraction to its always popular Sunday Animation Domination block. The Simpsons are back, so is Family Guy, and so is Bob's Burgers. And coming aboard with them is a new one called Bless the House, or the Hearts, I should say. That's Bless the Hearts. It's about a sudden group of people who have some big American dreams to fill, and we see how they make them work or not with a lot of humor. Bless the Hearts will premiere right after the season premiere of The Simpsons on September 29th, 8:30 p.m. Eastern and Pacific Time. Joining us live from Los Angeles is the creator and executive producer in an internet radio exclusive. Her work includes Saturday Night Live, Mad TV. She was story editor on King of the Hill, so this animation is not new with her. And more recently, such shows as Parks and Recreation and The Last Man on Earth, also a Fox Saturday Night track. Totally welcome to the show for the first time, Emmy Award winner Emily Spivey. Hello, Emily.
Hi, how are you?
Very, very well, thank you. And by the way, congratulations again to Fox on FX, et cetera, on all the Emmy Award wins over the weekend. What's it like, by the way, for you to be part of Fox again, this time on the animation front?
Oh, my gosh. Well, it's the biggest honor in the world. I mean, it's I never in my wildest dreams imagined that I would have a show coming on after The Simpsons. I cannot think of a higher honor, and I'm so grateful. I mean, it's super exciting. It feels like a lot of pressure, though, but I'm hoping that people will like the show and that it'll fit in nicely with the other wonderful animated shows on Sunday night.
What did working on King of the Hill and the long run that had on Fox, what kind of influence did it have on developing this series?
Oh, it was everything in the world. I was so in awe of Mike Judge and, of course, you know, Greg Daniels, too, for creating such a humane and specific and well-observed show about Mike's, you know, hometown and home state. And it just reminded me of the Andy Griffith Show in a way with its gentle humor and its amazing, well-drawn characters. And so for years, I think I've been dreaming of doing a similar thing but about my hometown in North Carolina. So it was very, very influential in the making of this show.
Where did you live in North Carolina, and how do you bring that experience of your life into the series?
Well, I grew up in High Point in Greensboro in North Carolina, which is called the Triad. And really what I've tried to do is just sort of create really authentic characters that are just amalgams of family members and people I grew up with. And me and the producers and the animators and the writers have worked really hard to try to create the atmosphere of North Carolina, which is very lush and green and hot and, you know, and the people who are soulful and hilarious and sweet and you know, just trying to get by. So hopefully we, if you're from North Carolina and you watch it, hopefully you'll feel that. And if you're from somewhere else, hopefully you'll enjoy watching this very specific time and place.
Mm-hmm. I've seen some of the promos that have run on various Fox shows, including their coverage of the NFL. And what comes across is that you have these people that are like, they're very relatable. Not only relatable in terms of what they want to cause in their life, but they're also relatable in terms of the kind of humor and the kind of adventures they get into.
Yes, yes. I'm glad that comes through. Because no matter where you're from, I think we all share the same sort of common qualities with family members and bills and, you know, just the struggles of life. So I'm happy to hear that you think it's relatable, because that's really what I want. I want everyone to be able to enjoy it, whether you're in California, New York, Maine, Florida, Chicago. So hopefully there'll be something that everyone can relate to in the show.
Mm-hmm. Once you got the go-ahead from Fox to do it, how long did it take to really pull the concept together, pull the plot, pull the storyline together, the crew, and, of course, the voices?
Well, I think all told, I first pitched it in October of 2016. So really, it's been almost 3 years in total of just the whole, from pitch to presentation, casting and presentation, to making the pilot, to gathering the writers and getting the animators and directors and everything. So, yeah, almost 3 years.
Mm. And were there certain, you have a really good voice cast, Kristen Wiig, Maya Rudolph, two talents from Saturday Night Live and other places. I always enjoy catching, no matter where they are. But you also have some other interesting people that you've got from who have different backgrounds in terms of both comedy and, in some cases, drama.
Yes. Yeah, we have also Ike Barinholtz, who's a dear friend of mine who I always had in mind for the lead character of Wayne, just because Ike is so big and funny and sweet and has so much heart. Jillian Bell is playing the daughter, Violet, who's sort of a dry wit, and she's a very talented artist, and she's sort of an oddball, but everyone loves her. They don't quite understand her, but they love her. And then who else do we have? Mary Steenburgen does a voice. She plays Maya's character's frenemy, Crystal Lynn Poole. And Holly Hunter does a voice. She plays Marjune Culpepper, who is the widow of the tobacco magnate that founded the town of Greenpoint, which is where the imaginary town that the show takes place.
And how long does it take to animate an episode?
Oh, Lord, how long does it take? Four months from animatic to, then we send it off to Korea for the color animation. So, yes, 4 to 5 months.
Mm. Amazing process. And
yeah, it's crazy.
It's amazing show. Yeah, it certainly is. Absolutely. We're talking about Bless the Heart. It's the brand new attraction in Fox's popular Sunday Animation Domination lineup, and it gathers a great slot, 8:30 p.m. Pacific time, starting on Sunday, September 29th, right after, that's the week after the Emmy Award telecast, which is this Sunday night. Following Sunday night, Animation Domination begins after NFL football. Simpson leads it off, and then this series comes in second. And after that, Family Guy, and of course, Bob's Burgers. We're talking with Emily Spivey. She's the creator and executive producer of Bless the Heart, and she joins us live from Los Angeles this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. Tom Allen, I'm with you live from the Big Apple, 75 degrees at the top of the hour. Glad you're aboard. We want to hear from you. So give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Don't forget, Friday on Tomorrow Be Televised, we'll have one of the crazy executive producers of the new NBC legal drama with Jimmy Smith, Bluff City Law. Dean Gregaris will join us. And we'll have, from Songland on NBC, from To Tell the Truth on ABC, and Hollywood Game Night with Jane Lynch on NBC as well, popular, unscripted, and game show director Ivan Dedinsky. Remember him also from Celebrity Name Game. He worked with Craig Ferguson, helped him get a couple of Emmy Awards for Best Game Show Host. His first Emmy Awards for that wonderful series. It ran 3 seasons of syndication. But you might not know, his wife is Audrey Morrissey, the executive producer of the long-running NBC series The Voice, and he owns his own production company, and he's working on a couple projects that might end up being programming services that will come to a smart TV set or a smart device like an Apple TV, Roku, etc., near you. Dean Gregaris from Bluff City Law, and Ivan Nowitzki from Song and a whole bunch of other things. They're with us Friday, same hour, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Did you decide when you put together your story team, your writers, did you want to draw from people you worked with in live action, like from SNL, from Mad TV, from Last Man on Earth, etc.? Or did you want to focus have more people who, like you, worked on King of the Hill and other such adult animated shows?
Well, I really just thought of the people that I mean, Maya is always my go-to because I adore her. And I usually when I write something, I almost always have something in mind for her because we've worked together for so long and we're, you know, we have a twin language and I just think she's the most talented person and I love working with her. And then Krista and I had been talking about this project with for a while, and I knew I always wanted her to play Jenny. So really, I just sort of like begged my friends and then hoped for the best. And luckily, it just sort of worked out that everyone was able to do it. So, you know, I'm so fortunate that that the stars aligned and people were able to come on board.
Well, talking about the stars aligning, when you got the writers to align, did you give them any marching orders? Like, think of, for storylines, think of incidents you dealt with your family. Or think of, if, let's say, if you were born in the South or raised in the South, think of things that happened to you that we can incorporate into the plots.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, I had, you know, everyone, you know, the beauty of a writer's room is that everyone sort of brings in their different points of views and it becomes hopefully a delicious stew of ideas and character voices and things like that. And I tried to, I mean, many of the people on the staff are from North Carolina. And then ones that aren't are people that I've worked with for a very long time. And, you know, people I worked with at the Groundlings. So it just was a nice mixture of, you know, North Carolinians and then talented actors and writers in that writer's room. Many of my writers, too, also do voices on the show. Jeremy Rowley, who I grew up with in the Groundlings, does a voice on the show, and he's also a writer. And then my EP, Andy Bobro, also does voices on the show, and I was in the Groundlings with him as well. So I just sort of, just like with the voice cast, I just pulled from all my favorite people and just hoped that they could do it.
Mm-hmm. Is there room for improvisation to some degree when you do a program like this?
Yeah. I mean, with the voice acting, for sure. Yeah. We let the actors play a lot in the booth if they want to. I mean, everyone is so, so funny. So we would be doing ourselves a disservice not to let them go for it in the booth if they feel like trying things, you know?
Yeah. What are some of the early adventures that we will see the Harts get into in the first few weeks?
Well, we have a Halloween episode that I really love that's based on an actual ghost story from my hometown about a ghost hitchhiker named Lydia. And Jenny gets mistaken for Lydia, the ghost hitchhiker. We have a Wayne and Jenny origin story about how they met. And it's a Black Friday episode, so our Thanksgiving episode is entirely about Black Friday. We have a Myrtle Beach episode, which is, if you're from North Carolina, you'll know how important Myrtle Beach is in your in your life. And they get caught up in a timeshare scam, so it's just like very small. I mean, I really love our Christmas episode, and so it's just, you know, small stories that hopefully have a big emotional impact. You know, there's also surrealistic aspects to the show. You know, Jesus is a character on the show, played by Kumail Nanjiani. So yeah, hopefully there's a lot for people to look forward to in the show.
Mm-hmm. Most animated series usually have a punchline that pops up or a central a phrase, let's say, or a quote that pops up over and over again. You know, we talked about The Simpsons before. The Simpsons has so many of them. The chair gag at the beginning, Bart and the chalkboard, I will look such and such and such and such. Don't have a cow man. The squeal from, Dough from Homer, and so forth. Was that something you wanted to do early on? Is let's have a few punchlines. Let's have a few like ongoing lines that we can, have from episode to episode.
Well, I think "Hey y'all, watch this" is one. We have a character named Brenda who quits her job all the time and then comes right back. So "I quit" is another one. I think those things happen organically. You know, you can't really set out to go, "Ooh, let's have a bunch of catchphrases." So we're still in the zone of, sort of seeing what, if something does rise to the top. You know, Wayne says, "I have a idea." So there's already some like Southern phrases coming out, but I think "y'all" and "bless" and "bless it" and "bless your heart" are all mixed in there as well.
Mm-hmm. What about visual gags? I noticed in the promo there is this one gag that pops up two or three times. I'm not going to say it, but I would put it this way. It's one that it's a little kinky, and that's all I'll say. But about what? Is that the same thing also, that you have like certain visual gags that pop up from time to time?
Oh, yes, for sure. Yeah, we have a character named Randy that is always showing up at public events and screaming about Satan and all that stuff. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, what was the kinky thing? I'm trying to think what it ought to be.
A bird comes and bites one of the characters in a certain place.
Oh.
Our family show, we do not want to say what it exactly is.
Yes. Yes, the birds like to attack Wayne in his most sensitive area. Let's put it that way.
That's a good way to say it.
And that is a visual gag. Yeah.
Yeah. And somebody must like that gag because they used it like two or three times in that Fox promo.
Oh, yeah. It's like, you know, when anybody gets punched in the nuts, I think it's maybe like comedy gold, ?
It's like also South Park, you know, "Oh, my God, they killed Kenny." And it's like, when in the episode is Kenny going to get boop, and the reaction of the other characters to it? It's amazing. Yeah. We are sitting with Emily Spivey. She is the creator and executive producer of the new Fox animated series, Bless the Heart. It's becoming part of their wonderful animation domination lineup with such terrific shows as The Simpsons, Family Guy, and, of course, Bob's Burgers, all Emmy Award winners, one way or the other. And the show is on 8:30, right after the season premiere of The Simpsons, now 30 years plus and going. And Emily's with us live from Los Angeles this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. Simon Abbott, I'm with you live from New York. Thank you for tuning us in and kicking off your Monday with a program all about television here on Blog Talk Radio, Speaker 9 Heart Radio. And if you have a question or comment in our meeting minutes with Emily, don't be shy. Raise the voice and use this number, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. What's it been like for you as an artist to go from sketch comedy to animation to live action, where you deal with an individual plot in an episode for the whole episode, like in Parks and Recreation or Last Man on Earth, and then back to animation?
Well, as a writer, you know, you're just sort of always learning along the way and trying to grow your repertoire of what you can do and what you want to accomplish and all that. So really for me, it's you know, it's just me and my point of view, whether it's animated or sketch or live action or what have you. I think ultimately you're just trying to write good characters. And if you're a comedy writer, you're trying to always write a good joke. And so I will say that writing for an animated show is very freeing because there's sort of no limits to what you can do and what you can make the characters do. So that's been just really refreshing. Like I remembered from my time at King of the Hill how fun it was just to get to have this world where you can control everything, you know, and it's, you know, you can do anything. It's not like live action where you're constrained by the time, you know, the forces of time and reality, you know. So it's just been really fun. But, yeah, it's always just me trying to write what I think is funny, no matter what the format is.
Mm-hmm. What cartoons influenced you in your career growing up that you like to use as influences for your work?
Oh, well, I mean, of course, The Simpsons, King of the Hill. You know, when I was young, I loved, there was a serialized cartoon called Star Blazers, which was actually very serious. I loved G-Force. I loved all the Disney movies. You know, so it was sort of like the usual suspects for me, really, I guess. I just grew up obsessed with cartoons, so it was just seemed like a natural place for the show.
And in the case of your series, you are running alongside some of the longest running animated shows in the history of television. The Simpsons, the king of that hill, of course, Family Guy, not too far behind. Bob's Burgers already on for a decade or more. Does it make you think like you would really like to have like as long a run as those shows are? And do you ever plan like how are we going to when we get to year 5, year 7, year 10? How are we going to treat our characters?
Well, I mean, you always hope for the best and hope that it will last a long time. I mean, it's impossible for me to even wrap my head around lasting as long as the Simpsons, you know. And, you know, I think Bob has done a great job of, like, keeping it fresh, and it's astonishing to me it's been on 10 years. It seems like just yesterday it was debuting. But yeah, that's sort of, like, impossible to know. I think you just have to take it one episode at a time and try to do the best you can and tell the best story you can in each episode and not look too deep into the future.
Yeah. That may be the secret of the Simpsons success, is that the people from James Brooks on down who have done that show or involved with that show, they seem to have treated it the one episode at a time, because I still watch the show and it never goes out of style. I know there are some people who are critics like, you know, like, oh, the early episodes are the best. But I think if people really give The Simpsons a shot, they will be very surprised at how funny the show still is, how the great cast still is, the interesting avenues they take the show from couch gag on, and they're still willing to, you know, try things like Treehouse of Terror and do unique spins on that. It's very interesting how those minds over there at Gracie Films, who put that show together every week, work, and they can do that for 30 plus years and 600 plus episodes.
Mm-hmm. It's remarkable.
Yeah, absolutely. One other thing before we go, it seems that we are in not only a renaissance of animation, not just for adults but for kids, but we also seem to be in this willingness to try all sorts of techniques. Not just computer animation and the regular cell, but things I mentioned with the show Undone that Michael Eisner is doing now with Amazon, on rotoscoping, on motion capture, on maybe even doing animation live. I saw a demonstration using 5G this past May from Verizon Media, where a character was animated live as you were watching it. What do you think about, as someone who works in both sides of animation and live action, what do you think about all the tools, let's say, that you and your fellow animators have to put programs together?
Well, I mean, that's such an interesting question. I mean, I think there's so many different platforms and like you said, technology, like anything that can enhance your storytelling toolbox, I think is an amazing thing. You know, but again, just like you were saying about The Simpsons, I really think it comes down to just telling good stories, you know, and no matter how fancy the technology is and how whiz bang the format is or whatever, you know, it really starts with, I mean, you have to start with a good story. So I mm-hmm. think in that way, it will lo-fi never change. It's always just that lo-fi thing of good storytelling.
Yeah. Do you think that at some point in your career, you might do another, like do genre television, like a game of or drama or something that stretches you in a different way? Does it mean you've had the kind of career where both in live action comedy, you've done sketch, you've done sitcom, you've done, the kind of comedy you do in animation, that do you see yourself stretching in new areas as you go forward?
Well, I mean, I'd love to. I'd love to write a drama, you know, if the opportunity arose and it was something that was interesting to me or a story that I wanted to tell, absolutely. Absolutely. I'm not sure I have the mind to do a Game of Thrones or anything. I'd like much more. I like much more true to life kind of stories. So it would probably be more, it would probably not be in the sci-fi genre, let's say.
Kristen Wiig, Maya Rudolph, Cats of Thousands, have the voice group behind Bless the Heart. It's the brand new Fox part of Animation Domination, and it begins 2 weeks from yesterday. That's September 29th, 8:30 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time, right after The Simpsons. The second part of Animation Domination is The Simpsons, starting its 30th-plus season at 8 o'clock. Then Bless the Hearts, then Family Guy and Bob's Burgers round out the lineup, and it all takes place right after Sunday afternoon football on your local Fox station. Don't forget to check your local place where Fox is available in your area on your local broadcast station. And remember, for more details about the program online, go to fox.com. And remember, don't forget, next Sunday night, 8 to 11 p.m. Eastern, 5 to 8 and 8 to 11 Pacific, the latest Primetime Emmy Awards. Fox programs are certainly in the hunt for them as well. But once again, Bless the Hearts, week after, September 29th, at 8:30 p.m. Eastern and Pacific time, right after the season premiere of The Simpsons. Emily Spivey, the creator and executive producer of Bless the Hearts, thank you again for joining us. Good luck with you and everybody on your team for making it happen. And hopefully, like the other shows and part of that lineup, you have a wonderful, long, and great run.
Oh, my gosh. Well, thank you so much. From your mouth to God's ears. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome, Emily. Anytime. Pleasure to have you aboard. Have a great, great week ahead. Take care.
All right. You too. Thanks again.
All right, bye-bye now. Emily Spivey, creator and executive producer of Bless the Hearts, joining us live from Los Angeles. I want to thank our guests for being with us today. All of you for tuning in. Don't forget, Friday on Tomorrow We Televise, we'll have Diego Gomez. He's one of the creators and executive producers of the new NBC legal drama with Jimmy Smith's Bluff City Law. Premieres, I believe, next Monday night at 10 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time. And we will have game show and unscripted program director Ira Nitsky, whose credits include Songland, Hollywood Game Nights, Celebrity Name Game, and To Tell the Truth. And we'll talk about his company, Deviance Media, and the opportunities he might go for smart TV set and smart TV device programming. That's all coming up Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. If you came in late on today's program, you want to catch up on episodes you missed, go to the homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised, www.blogtalkradio.com/televised. Check out the podcast version, available anytime you like, at iTunes, at Apple TV, at Speakers Podcast app, and, of course, www.irradio.com. When you go to that website, put Tomorrow Will Be Televised in the search bar, click, and you are in. And don't forget, one more time, there's our classic trivia question of the week. Name the Brady Bunch's pet. We need the names of the pet and the type of pet. If you're first with the correct answer, you'll win the 3-minute rule. Stay left to get more from any picture presentation by recent TWT guest Brant Pindivic. Email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. It's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Don't forget to close your name and where you're emailing from. We'll also post the question tomorrow on Facebook and on Twitter at UBCSimonTWBT. Remember, use that email. Let us know what you think about our program, about our guests, and your thoughts on where TV is at and where it's going. It's always appreciated. That's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Don't forget, you find me on Facebook, follow me on Twitter, and we always like to hear from you no matter what media you use. Why? Because what you say matters. The views expressed in this program are those of the participants, not necessarily those of Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, and iHeartRadio. At BTR, production associate is Candace Williams. Andy Toews, Blog Talk Radio's general manager, with Jay Steinberg, executive content producer. The co-founders of Blog Talk Radio and Speaker are Al Levy and Bob Cherish. Tomorrow We Televise is brought to you by Audible.com, an Amazon company. Remember, Audible will transform the way you hear the world. For 3 free audio books a month, 1 month trial, and more, audibletrial.com/televise. For Tomorrow We Televise, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for joining us. Have a wonderful rest of your week. If you're in New York, check out Diversity Week and IFP Week and all the great activities involving television all over the place in New Weba, York. We'll be back on Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, you know where, Blog Talk Radio Speaker and the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. Whatever you're up to this week ahead, please make it safe and make it great. And keep a thought in mind in your prayers, too, for all the people still impacted by the remnants of Hurricane Dorian. Until the next time, stay well and stay tuned.